Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 123. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd once again is Alex Cazora. Alex, you drove around in a limousine this past week, styling and profiling over the weekend there.
Something like that. Yeah, I had a good buddy of mine who got married, was in his wedding, so a lot of fun, but happy to be back for the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm married to, is the podcast.
I hear you. Are you any closer to getting hitched yourself, or is that still a ways away?
I'm trying to move out of Mom's basement first, and then we'll worry about anything else.
I don't know. Maybe you could talk Mom into letting her move into the basement there. So keep that.
Every girl's dream.
Absolutely. Married to a basement blogger. Okay. You know, quite honestly, we're still over a month away, roughly, from the start of training camp. Not a lot of news is happening as expected this time of year, except for players maybe not paying some traffic tickets and driving on suspended license, which we already covered, on Friday with Artie Burns. So no need to hit on that again. Probably going to be dead news-wise for, I don't know, maybe at least the next 10 days or so. At least we hope that to be the case. But with that said, as of today, we are now 2 weeks away from the deadline for the Steelers to have Le'Veon Bell sign to a long-term contract extension. If they do not get one done with him come the 17th, he will have to play underneath the franchise tag. We've been talking about it all offseason. If anybody is at all shocked that nothing has happened up until this point, shame on you, because this is the kind of situations where deadlines spur action. And yeah, we've had a couple of players that have already been issued the franchise tag sign long-term deals. With the Steelers, I'm not surprised being the fact that Le'Veon Bell, the position that he plays, the amount of money that he's looking for versus what the market is right now for the position, probably still a long ways away from coming to some sort of deal. But, as of right now, even up until if we got 4 or 5 hours away from the deadline, there's no real reason to think that this deal won't get done right now.
Right. I mean, I still can't say for sure how it's going to go. We haven't heard much updates because, like you said, there really isn't much to update. You're not going to really hear about any sort of progress until probably July 17th. Like you said, deadline spur action. I think the last thing that we heard was Adam Schefter kind of saying that it could go either way in terms of a deal getting done or not. I still believe
Hey, that's a pretty good prediction, by the way, right?
Right. That crystal ball of Schefter's of his. That's why they paid him the big bucks at ESPN.
It could go either way. He's either going to get a deal or he's not.
Yeah, life's easy when you have all the options on the table. But I agree that I think it's going to get done. I just don't know how to put that in a level of confidence because I really don't know exactly how close that they are. But you're right, we don't have a whole lot of updates, and we won't until that time, other than the fact that we know that Bell appears to be, health-wise in very good shape. We saw the video of him, I think, last week playing basketball, and he's out there training in, I think, L.A. you had written about this weekend. So, health-wise, he looks solid.
Yeah, and, there's no reason to think that he won't be ready to go by the start of training camp. And look, if a deal somehow does not get done, there's people writing about him holding out training camp and all. To me, that's just foolish because it's out of the Steelers' hands come July 17th. So if a deal doesn't get done there, the Steelers can't do a deal with him. So,
right. Explain that for the people that don't understand, because that's important and people should. And I know some people don't. understand that point.
Yeah, I mean, a deal cannot be consummated with him. If one isn't done by July 17th, then he can't get one until after the season ends. I mean, that's the rules of franchise tag players. So, you know, it would be senseless, you know, for Bell to hold out training camp. He'd only be hurting himself and his team. You know, what is he going to prove at that point? I mean, the Steelers can't turn around and say, well, okay, we want you in camp. Here's the deal. Okay. I mean, there's absolutely no bargaining power whatsoever, outside of Bell wanting to be, an asshole, for lack of a better word, you know.
It's 10:30 over here, Dave.
I mean, really. I mean, there's absolutely no reason for that whatsoever. And you want to talk about him getting on the bad side of some teammates and all like that? I just don't see it. I don't see how people are even writing about it. I mean, if you want to write about talking about, okay, well, why a deal may or may not happen. By the 17th, I understand that. But in the meantime, and look, I mean, if he doesn't get a deal done by the 17th, I mean, there's a very good chance this is 2017's his final year, because at that point, it would cost, in order to prevent him from hitting free agency next year, you're going to have to tag him again at over $14 million. I mean, if you think the Steelers may have had, may have issues paying them $12 million or so in 2017, what do you think they're going to think about possibly paying them over $14 million in 2018? So, that's why I think, I mean, unless Bell and his agent are being totally outlandish, looking for $13, $14 million or something like that, I can still understand them looking right around a franchise tag number of $12.1, $2 million. But much more than that, for them to be looking for that for an average yearly value makes absolutely no sense. Now, as we've said time and time again, the fact that he can potentially earn $26 million, $27 million over the next 2 years wearing the tag needs to be taken into consideration as far as his cash flow goes for the first two seasons. But, on the flip side, there's no guarantee that he gets that franchise tag from the Steelers in 2018. However, if he does hit the free agent market and of course stays healthy during the 2017 season, he's going to cash in pretty huge from some other team regardless. So, in my opinion, somebody asked me on Twitter, yesterday being Sunday, do I give it more than a 50-50 chance? And quite honestly, I have no reason to change my initial thoughts on this dating way back. And that's the fact that I still think a deal gets done. And if it doesn't, well, then be prepared to watch Le'Veon Bell's final season in Pittsburgh in 2017.
Do you think that fear of losing him is going to help drive the Steelers to the table and pay up maybe a little bit more to get this deal done for July 17th?
You don't overpay regardless, I think overpaying is much more over than what the franchise tag amount is. I think Bell needs to be a little bit realistic here too. I've been talking about that average yearly salary of, my view has always been, and when you look back at history, is once you put some sort of a tag on a player, you're essentially telling them that's what they're worth. So, have there been instances in the past where a new deal has followed a tag that averaged lower than the franchise tag amount? Yeah, I'm sure we could dig some up, but on the most part, that doesn't happen. Now you can go back and look back at when the Steelers placed the transition tag on Jason Worlds. I mean, was Jason Worlds really worth that?
Was that like $9 million or something?
Yeah, that transition tag amount, and push comes to shove, thank God the Steelers didn't get a long-term deal done with him. But, I mean, go back and look at Jeff Reed, right? I mean, they placed him, I realize he's a kicker, but they placed a franchise tag on him and ended up not signing him to a long-term deal. So it has happened that the Steelers have used the tag only not to get a long-term deal done. I think the biggest hitch with potentially getting a deal with Bell is not so much the average yearly value, as long as it's, you know, reasonable, you know, $11-12 million range. It's just, you know, how much guaranteed money are you going to tie up with him? Because, you know, he does play a position that's prone to wearing players out, and he hasn't been the model picture of health so far during his career. And, you know, I've kind of written all along too, when it comes to a long-term deal with him, man, I try to keep that signing bonus as low as possible, and I try to give him as much money in 2017 via base salary, roster bonus, signing bonus as I can, and keep his cap. You know, his cap hit right now is the franchise tag amount. I try to keep his cap hit as close to that number as I can this year, just for this year, and do so by keeping the signing bonus down. That way, if he gets suspended again, if he has a serious injury, effectively, you could probably cut this guy after the 2018 season and not put yourself in cap hell. So I think there's a way. I think there's going to be push and pull with both sides, as is usually the case here with these types of deals. I don't think it's the fact of what we think we might lose him is going to cause the Steelers to overpay, because I think deep down inside it comes down to, look, we just don't want to have that much guaranteed money out there for a guy that you know, has been in trouble with the league, has been injured, and we might wear him out after the next 2 years regardless.
Remind me and the listeners again, Dave, of the parameters of the deal that you believe would happen if one gets struck, the years, the total amount of money, just to put that, those big numbers to it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the biggest thing is he's going to want probably around $18 million or so in cash in the first year. So, and you can come, you can get that to however you want in signing bonus. You know, let's say an $8 to $10 million signing bonus, the rest in, you know, combined base salary and roster bonus or whatnot, you know. So I think realistically, you know, if you did let's say you ripped up the tag and you did, let's say, a 5-year deal, and you gave him a let's say $10 million signing bonus, you know, that would be a $2 million amortization in the first year, 2017. And let's say you gave him $8 million base salary. I mean, there's your $18 million first year right there. And then you're talking about a cap hit of $10 million. Okay, so I mean, you actually would come away by lowering his cap hit a little bit. Now, you know, you would have to get, I think, to by year two, his take home cash of somewhere around $27 million, and you've already paid him $18 in 2017. So, you know, a $9 million base salary or a $4 million base salary and a $5 million roster bonus in 2018 would also not only, you know, would give you a kind of an out of that contract, if you will. However, you would still have, you know, if you cut him, you would have $8 million. You know, let's say you had to cut him after the 2017 season, which it would have to be a serious injury or something weird happen at that point. You would have $8 million left, you know, in potential dead money there. So, like I'm saying, I would try to, in the first year of this deal, let's say it's $18 million, $17, $18, $19 million that he wants to walk away from the table with, then I would try to give him, you know, probably half of that in the signing bonus and the other half, roughly half in a base salary, because I just don't want a huge 14, $15 million signing bonus laying out there to be, you know, a big portion of that being potential dead money after the first 2 years of the deal, and those 2 years being 2017-2018.
Yeah, I think it all sounds fair. I think it all sounds good. We'll just see what happens. Got 2 weeks to for the team to hammer it out.
Yeah, ideally, I think you go in with the idea of signing him that you want 3 years out of him of a five-year deal, and if you get five out of it, great. But I think the idea is you go in there, you know, maybe structuring to pay him, I don't know, what's 3 times 12? 36, you know, $36 million over the course of the next 3 years, right around in there. And if you get, you know, the final 2 years out of him, great. If not, you know, well, you shouldn't have.
You plan for it, yeah.
Right. You know, you shouldn't have much of any dead money left over at that point. Right. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, we got 14 days, and I'm not surprised at all. It hasn't, you know, it hasn't had a deal yet. If you go back and look at the last time a running back was franchised, you know, Matt Forte and Ray Rice. Well, Forte's agent is the same agent that Bell has now, and that deal ran right up until the deadline. So we'll see, but you can bet we'll finally have our answer in 2 weeks, and we'll no longer have to talk about this.
It's a big story, though. It's the last hurdle for the Steelers to clear this offseason.
Right, and actually, you know, after that too, that's when you'll probably start seeing, you know, some, whether or not some dominoes fall with guys like Villanueva. And look, I mean, like it or not, you know, Tuitt is more of a slam dunk to get done than Villanueva. But, why wouldn't you wait to see what happens with Bell, who right now is costing, you know, over $12 million against the cap. Right now, you want to make sure to see what happens there before you go, you know, get any of these other deals done. But, okay, moving right along here. With the month of July being here, training camp starting at the end of July, I'm previewing 50 players over the course of 25 days, giving rundowns of what I think. Not only what they did in 2016, kind of their strengths and weaknesses and their outlook for 2017. I've already done 5 such players. We're going to talk about the first 4 that I did today. And really, a lot of these guys don't need a lot of explanation. But Ben Roethlisberger was first of the 50 that I profiled. And, you know, look, if you look back at his 2016 season, we've talked quite a bit about, his injury that he had. If there's any weakness for Roethlisberger right now, I think it's the fact that, he needs to play better on the road, especially than he did last season. And he needs to stay, obviously, needs to stay healthy, not only for the obvious fact they need him on the field, but if you look back over history and Roethlisberger's first few games back from injury, that hasn't been great either. So, you know, this is a guy that, you know, I don't think he can rule out a 5,000 yard passing season. But, you know, I think he'll be close as long as he plays in 15, 16 games. I think he's a guy that can hit 30 touchdowns in 2017. I think roughly 10 or so touchdowns come along with that. Is there any other kind of strengths or weaknesses that, you know, I mean, his strengths are obviously the deep ball still, even though probably not as good an arm as it once was. He handles pressure extremely well at this point of his career. Even though the play action numbers weren't great last year, he's still great at play action, in my opinion. What am I missing there in previewing Ben Roethlisberger?
Well, you know, I've always said I think he's always been looked at as that kind of backyard, you know, sandlot quarterback, and I think the narrative is finally starting to shift on him on a national level. I think Steeler fans have recognized for several years now that his game has evolved, and I think he needs to get credit for being a really good rhythm passer in the pocket as well as 5-step, 7-step game where the ball's getting out on time. That's another of many reasons why his sack numbers are down, because he's become a really good pocket passer and a rhythm quarterback. So, you know, that's just a strength I like to remind fans of, to kind of shake that idea that he's just a run around, make it up as we go along quarterback. He can still be that at times, don't get me wrong, but the majority of the time in the bulk of his game and where he succeeds just as often is now within the pocket instead of outside of it.
Is this, I mean, keeping our fingers crossed that nothing happens over the course of the next, you know, 2.5 months or whatever it is till the regular season starts, I mean, is this the best offensive unit he's ever had?
Probably, unless you would go the other way and think about the early years he had where it was such a run-dominated physical bunch up front. But, you know, the offensive line is so good right now and the run game is just as strong. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, the numbers you pointed out, 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns. I mean, the sky's the limit, I think, for him statistically. I won't put too many barriers on that just because of the upside of this passing attack.
I mean, you know, low side 26, 27 touchdowns, right? I mean...
Mm-hmm.
And high side, I mean, I guess he could throw, what, 32, 33, probably, you know,
35,
be,
yeah.
35 yeah. Wouldn't be out of the question. I think yardage-wise, you know, can definitely push the 5,000 barrier the way he did a few years ago. Hopefully he's only playing in 15 games this year. Hopefully he gets to sit out the regular season finale and you know, here's to hoping – he gets pulled from a couple of games, you know.
Yeah.
When's the last time we've seen Roethlisberger leave a game, with over half of the fourth quarter remaining with the Steelers leading big? That would actually be nice to see as well, too. So, I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. I mean, he is what he is and has been for a few years now. Obviously, a lot more comfortable in the Todd Haley offense. And as I said, I mean, you get Bryant back. You get Eli Rogers another year older. You're going to have, hopefully for the first time, Le'Veon and Bryant both on the field to start the season. And we already highlighted in a previous show how the Killer Bees have only played basically a equivalent of a quarter of a season together. So I'm really looking forward to this season for Ben Roethlisberger. And, you know, just keep your fingers crossed everybody stays healthy. Healthy moving forward there. Pretty cut and dry on Ben Roethlisberger, and you know, for the most part, I think if most of these players will be pretty cut and dry on. And number two, I did was Cameron Hayward. Cameron Hayward, of course, is a guy that missed just over half the season last year with the torn pectoral muscle. If you think back to the preseason, Alex, I mean, he was a little banged up. Remember writing about how the high ankle sprain and wondering how that was going to affect him at the start of the season. Well, he overcame that. And by week four, boy, it looked like Cameron Hayward was on track to have a tremendous season. Had the three sacks in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think he had something like seven total tackles and a couple of passes defensed in that game. Ultimately, a hamstring injury the following week against the Jets knocked him out of that game and the next two. He returns for, I think, two more games and then suffers a torn pectoral muscle against the Cowboys, and that ultimately ended his season. As far as strengths with Cameron Hayward, you know, I pointed out a few. Ability to take on multiple blockers is both a base 3-4 and a nickel interior lineman. Seems to play well, better as a one-gap player than he did as a two-gap player. Plays within the scheme, usually assignment sound. Stays square, keeps his feet, and always spotted chasing after the football. Anything that you'd like to add as far as strengths go with Cameron Hayward?
No, I think you hit it really well, Dave, and I'm glad you brought up about being assignment sound, because that's such an underrated factor in the run game, obviously, but in the pass game as well. When you talk about contain principles and how do you make your blitzes work, oftentimes the way a blitz is successful is because the contain guys do their job and they don't allow escape lanes for the quarterback. And even when you're rushing four, it can be tough because, you know, four guys trying to contain every gap is difficult to do. I think Hayward does a nice job of it overall, so very good list to have, Dave.
As far as weaknesses go, I mean, not many, I don't think. I think if you want to nitpick on him, it could be against his run or his play against a run, certain situations, and you know, but with that said, he did have six tackles against the run last year that resulted in either no gain or lost yardage, and he managed to do that, of course, in seven games played. So, you know, it's hard to nitpick on a player. I mean, he obviously has weaknesses. So, what would you like to add on?
Yeah, I think he's one of the toughest guys to come up with a weakness for. I think his run defense, I know you're nitpicking, but I wouldn't go there. I'd probably say I would like a little bit of another pass rush move. You know, his speed bull and his bull rush is his best move, but maybe, you know, I'd like to see a little more effective of maybe an arm over or a club or, you know, something else that's a little less in your face to get around these guys to throw at some of these guards. You know, Tim and Tuitt are a little the opposite. Tuitt's the guy that's going to go around you, and Hayward's the guy that goes through you. I'd like each to kind of add a complementary move, and I think that's kind of what I'd like to see a little bit more from Cam Hayward.
As far as an outlook for 2017, assuming he gets back to full health and all, I mean, we could see almost a repeat of what, 2014 season, right? I mean, a year where he gets seven or so sacks and, what was it, 50-something total tackles and maybe some double-digit stops against the runs for no gains or losses. I mean, you know, we don't expect double-digit sacks, right? I mean,
right.
But as I pointed out, I think a stat line similar to what he posted in 2014 is very realistic and maybe a tad better.
And if some of these outside linebackers, you know, Bud Dupree plays the way we expect him to, and T.J. Watt comes in, you know, doing well as a rookie, that may lead to more sacks for a guy like Cam Hayward in the interior defensive lineman. Because if you're getting more pressure on the outside, you're going to be forcing the quarterback to step up more often. You're going to be flushing him outside the pocket, and you're going to be taking away his, you know, options and extending the play. And, you know, guys like Hayward with their, you know, obviously ability to collapse the pocket and then their ability to hustle after the football on the perimeter is going to lend itself to some extra sack opportunities. So, yeah, an 8-sack season would not surprise me in the least.
And we expect, you know, Alameda, I mean, not Alameda, I always go Alameda.
You went to Amu.
I always got Tyson Alualu. You know, we expect him to get some snaps in this defense. Obvious, you know, Javon Hargrave's going to get you know, a few extra snaps in some nickel situations as well too. Hopefully, you know, you can keep Hayward and to it that, you know, as well, really around the 75% to 80% snap mark. Hopefully, get him out of a few games a little bit earlier to preserve them. But I mean, expecting a monster season for Hayward, you know, one would think. The next player that I broke down in this series, tight end Jesse James, and this is a guy that's going to end up being much in the same position as he was last year. I mean, the Steelers went out and signed Ladarius Green to that big deal. He obviously wasn't ready by the start of the season. That meant, you know, Jesse James was effectively the number one. For the most part, I like the way that Jesse James progressed last season. I mean, he caught 39 balls for 338 yards, three touchdowns. He did so on 60 targets. He's still a baby, 6'7", turned 23 in June. We've talked several times about how we were both impressed with the way his blocking improved. You know, he's a legitimate, I think, red zone threat that maybe needs to be looked into getting the ball into him a little bit more, maybe in that area of the field in 2017. I think he's caught 8 of 13 passes thrown his way thus far in the red zone so far during his career, and that's constituted 50 yards and 4 touchdowns. So strengths, I don't think I'm going to get any argument with you there. So let's look at weaknesses, and I think the main thing is, while his blocking has improved, there's still room for more improvement, especially when it comes to leverage and angles. I think with him, especially not only stationary, but on the move, we'll see him whiff occasionally. And I highlighted this earlier in the offseason. This guy's got to get better on third downs as a pass target.
Yeah, no arguments here, Dave. Yeah, I think he does. I think he showed the ability to catch in traffic, but you want to continue to see him, you know, improve there, like you said, especially on third downs with the tight end. The slot guys are going to be looked at as some of the key, you know, options in the progression. But, you know, obviously, Jesse James is not going to be like Darius Green. He's not going to be this seam vertical threat. So you're going to go back to those traditional Heath Miller molds of being a guy that can make combative catches in traffic and move the sticks. And again, he did show that at times last year. I don't want to say that he didn't, but that's the big area you want to improve on. That and red zone play too, because he's 6'6", or 6'7", whatever he is, and you know, you're going to look for him as a weapon, you know, in the red area. And obviously red zone for the offense is an area that they have to improve on, that they should and expect to improve on in 2017, and Jesse James is going to be a big part of that.
I'd like to see about 10 receptions this year out of RPOs. You know, Heath Miller made that look so effortlessly, you know, inside, either lined up at the end of the line of scrimmage or slightly detached or whatnot. You know, get the numbers the way you want them to look like in the box. And you know, Roethlisberger and Heath Miller used to be on point all the time. And get that little quick release, you know, that quick three-step drop, 6-yard pass down the field, and let Jesse go another 4 or 5 yards with the football. So looking for about 10 receptions out of them that way in those kind of situations. And once again, it's got to do a better job. It got to be more of a clutch player, in my opinion, on third downs. 50 receptions kind of the ceiling for him, you think?
Yeah, I think that's what I had written last week. I mean, he did have 39 last year, and obviously Darius Green bumped his playing time towards the second half of the season. But with so many weapons on this offense, you know, Bell's going to get 80, and Bryant's going to have, you know, 60, 65 maybe. AB is going to obviously have over 100. I mean, there's going to naturally be a cap on that. So efficiency is going to be big for Jesse James because he's not going to catch, obviously, 70 passes this season.
Yeah, and I wrote too. I like him to, he's never going to be your classic flex Rob Gronkowski, Kelsey, you know, that type of player. But, you know, if he could just increase his reception percentage a little bit, maybe increases his average yards per reception a little bit and become an even better blocker, you know, he'll definitely be an asset to this offense. Okay, James Harrison up fourth on my list, and the ninth wonder of the world, if you will, shows no signs of slowing down right now. Turned 39 in March, platoon last season with Jarvis Jones on the right side, and you know, come that game against the Cowboys, from that point forward, it was all James pretty much on the right side. He even still managed to lead the Steelers in sacks last season with 5 and was 3rd on the team in run tackles for losses with 5 of those as well, too. Still plays the run well, can still get after the quarterback. When he needs to, I guess. You'd like to see a little bit more consistency there. His strengths, obviously, is his ability to use the bull rush and rip move off the edge. And that, in my opinion, is what's allowed him to stick around so long, that along with the fact that he's in great shape for a man of his age and his size and all he's been through. Remains a good run defender. Weaknesses. It's hard to come up. You know, hard to make yourself force yourself to get into talking about weaknesses with James Harrison. But I think obviously you have to point to coverage skills with him. Mostly just a hook zone type defender at this point in his career, and really has been that way for 7 years or so. Just doesn't go well out in space. And look, while he has led the Steelers outside linebackers in sacks the last two seasons, I want to see a quicker start from him in 2017 when it comes to that stat column.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that. I'm sure playing in the rotation has hurt the opportunity some, obviously. You're right that he's not that great of a man coverage guy, obviously, but it is worth pointing out that, you know, we had written maybe 2 weeks ago about PFF grading him as the best coverage guy of any edge rusher last year, and I think it's always been an underrated part of his game, and even in his old age, he still does a good job in his zone spot drops.
Right. I mean, and look, we hope to see less, you know, we're still going to see some of that, but you know, I'd much rather, I think I'm at the point now where I'd rather see TJ moving around a little bit more off the line than I am James, and it would be interesting if PFF would have added a little bit more context, you know, maybe to that stat, because let's face it, you just don't want James Harrison running with people if you can avoid it. Now, 2017 outlook for James Harrison, you know, I think it's quite evident. With T.J. Watt now in Pittsburgh, at some point he's going to eventually take over full-time on the right side. I still expect Harrison to open the season as a starter and give away to the rookie, you know, as the season progresses. We've talked about snap splits quite a bit over the last couple weeks here. Harrison around 50 to 60% of all defensive snaps still sounds right as long as he remains healthy. And I think I'll be happy with a five to six sack season again, along with 10 or so run tackles resulting either in no gain or a loss.
Right. That sounds pretty accurate. That's what we've talked about throughout. And if you can get a couple strip sacks, two maybe, that's actually icing on the cake.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that I fear with him, and I've feared this every year, for the last three or so since he's been back going into the season, is just, man, at some point you just wonder, when is that back or, when is that knee going to just, sideline him? So knock on my wooden desk here. I would like to burn him a little hard at the beginning of the season. Maybe take it easy on it. Once you get Watt kind of acclimated to things, kind of ease up on Debo during the middle of the season, in order to have him ready for a potential playoff run there. But you think this is it for him? Is 2017 it for him? I mean, I know he's on a contract another year after that, but This has to be it, right?
I don't know. We said that last year and the year before and the year before. So I don't even think about when Harrison's going to retire, because he might not even really know either. But as long as he keeps playing the way he does, age is just a number for him right now.
All right. Anything to add on these four players? I mean, look, we talk about snaps with these guys. I think of all the guys that we talked about, obviously Roethlisberger and Jesse James are, Roethlisberger expected to play, nearly all the snaps, and James probably around, 75%, 80% of the snaps right now in 2017. I think when you go over to the defensive side of the ball, we talked about Tuitt. Cameron Hayward being around 75% of the snaps, and James Harrison, 587 snaps he played last year. So that's all. It's getting in the neighborhood of 60%, maybe a little bit less than that in 2017. But these four guys expected a lot out of in 2017.
Absolutely, especially again the pass rushers. We've harped on it so much, but that's because the team has harped on it so much and made it such a point of getting there with four. And obviously Harrison has to continue what he's doing, and Watt and Dupree are the big X factors at outside linebacker this year.
All right, Alex, you and I talk all the time that we write things and we think, oh man, this is going to get a lot of comments on it, and it doesn't. And then we write some other things and we think, all right, we'll put this out there and see how it does. Not very hopeful for a lot of comments, and it turns around and gets 100 of them. You just never know sometimes what the readers are going to be interested in and what's going to provoke them to voice some opinions on. And kind of such was the case this over the weekend. Deion Sanders I think all this was kind of brought along by these monster trades and contracts that these NBA players are getting. And I understand that in the grand scheme of things, Deion Sanders and Steve Wyche don't fully believe that some of these trades that they were going to or they did suggest would ultimately come true or had a legitimate chance of happening. But some of them are just I don't mind talking about some of these type of things, these trade scenarios during the off season, but let's get realistic here. And Deion Sanders threw out the point that the Steelers should trade for either Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson. And in a non-salary cap world, that's all fine and dandy. Richard Sherman guaranteed to make $11.43 million in 2017 and another $11 million in 2018. Look, I understand there were rumblings during the offseason about Sherman might get dealt, but absolutely no way was that going to happen. And Patrick Peterson, A, why in the hell would the Cardinals trade him? And B, he's scheduled to earn $9.75 million in 2017, and he's got some hefty contract numbers up through 2020, the final year of his season. And Someone in the comments even wrote, well, you know, the Steelers, you know, I guess pointing to the fact that I was quoting cap numbers. They wanted to say, well, the Steelers were willing to pay Dante Hightower $10 million a year. Well, here's the thing. $10 million wasn't going to be Dante. Let's assume that a deal got done for $10 million a year with Dante Hightower. That wasn't going to be his cap number in 2017. And, in fact, you know, depending on how that thing would have scheduled, a little bit of a, you know, you could probably bet that his cap number would have been lower than $10 million in 2018 had a deal got done either. So I think that's a poor argument to use there. The fact of the matter is and say what you will about the Steelers probably going after Kirkpatrick, you know, Dre Kirkpatrick, there were rumblings about that. The Steelers just, that's something they don't do. They don't trade for these high profile players, you know, such as this. And I was amazed the amount of comments that this post gotten. Several people saying, yeah, they should trade for Sherman, or yeah, they should trade for Patrick Peterson.
Right, yeah, I don't want to spend, you know, too much time on this. I just thought it was interesting because, yeah, I think the fans were interested in talking about it just for some off-season fodder. And if anyone hadn't read the article yet over the weekend, you know, go check it out or let me know, you know, your thoughts on, you know, what would you give up for Patrick Peterson or Richard Sherman? So, Dave, let me ask you, what would even be, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but what would even be something that you would trade if you had the opportunity and, let's say, the money worked for one of those top corners?
Man, I mean, I mean, you would think a first rounder would have to be involved, right?
I think multiple. I think two firsts would have to be in play.
I mean, I would not be willing to go that route. I'm sorry. I mean,
yeah.
I love shutdown cornerbacks as much as the next guy, but I, you know, as I've said time and time again, give me some average guys. Give me the Ike Taylors and just give me a pass rush that can get pressure with Ford. I'll take my chances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it nice to have ball hawks and guys that can take the football away in the secondary? Absolutely, but you can win games with pressure as opposed to, you know, picking the ball off, you know, in my opinion. So, I mean, asking me what I'd be willing to give up, not much.
Yeah, not what's required to do that deal.
Right, not enough to you know, that's required to get the deal done. And for as far and boy, old Steve Weiss, not to be outdone, thought the Steelers should trade for Von Miller. I mean,
all right, what would you trade for Von Miller?
Oh, jeez, I mean,
everything.
Yeah, I mean the guy, but here's the thing: at this point, I mean, there's no doubt he's top, you know, one of the top, if not the top edge rusher in the league right now. But I mean, when giving that up and the contract he just signed, you get to the point too of wondering how much does he have left? You know, are you going to be able to see the fruits of that entire contract on top of it? I mean, in a non-salary cap world, it's absolutely fantastic, you know,
mm-hmm.
to dream this stuff up. I mean, if you're an owner that, you know, thinks nothing about throwing money at situations, you know, but in the flip side, we've seen in the past, right? Teams try to build these mega rosters in 1 year. And how does that turn out? You know,
right. What the Eagles several years ago didn't work.
Right. Exactly. So I don't even know how we got on the how it got to the point that we're talking about it and why in the heck it got as many comments as it did. And once again, sometimes you write things, you just don't know how they're going to be received, you know, by the readers. But a lot of people certainly didn't want to talk about that. What else do we have to talk about here?
Well, I know we want to get into some questions. Do we have a lot of questions, Dave? Should we jump into those, or,
yeah,
or what do you think?
We have enough, most definitely. Let's see here if I can find a few. Do you have any in front of you?
I remember, the only one I remember, I forget who it was from, just asked if you could go with one Steeler, current Steeler, to Vegas, who would you take? And I would probably take Arthur Motes, because I knew I wouldn't get arrested or in serious trouble, but I'd still probably have a good time. So I wouldn't go with Artie Burns. He'd probably get pulled over for speeding.
Yeah.
But I think Arthur Motes would be fun to hang out with.
being as how I don't like to be bothered, I would like maybe James Harrison, because I think I'd be even though he would be very well noticed and recognized walking around in Vegas, people I think would be intimidated to actually go up and talk to him. So that would definitely be I think my choice when choosing somebody to go to Vegas. Let's see if I can find a few. I'm trying to find my original tweet here. What did you think about you're not a big wrestling fan, but what did you think about that leak that D'Angelo Williams
I was gonna write about it. Yeah, he face planted. he's got some work to do, clearly. Life's work is a little rougher than I thought it'd be.
Yeah, I don't think he hit that nailed that one just the way that that he wanted to. Man, Alex, for the life of me, I can't find out trying to find out where that tweet was. I think we had another one that was something along the lines that we talked about. Oh, I remember one of them was, and I wrote this in the five questions as well, too. Name the players that you think will still be under contract 5 years from now. And I think David added on to that and wanted to get our thoughts. Do we think Mike Tomlin will still be the coach 5 years from now?
So I have the questions pulled up, so I'll go through them throughout. So you may answer both what players I think will be here 5 years and Tomlin.
Is that sure.
Oh man, I don't even have I'd have to think about all the players. Tuitt, Dupree, because I think Dupree is gonna go where he needs to go. Sean Davis. I'm just doing this haphazardly. I should probably do this offense defense to clear my thoughts. AB, you think AB is going to be here 5 years from now? I think he will.
Wow.
I don't know. His effectiveness is going to take a hit, but just so he takes care of his body, and I don't see him playing anywhere else.
Watt, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, let's assume the rookie class. Yeah, I'm going to assume the rookie class. Okay. You know, top guys do well.
Any of the offensive lines still around at that point 5 years from now?
DeCastro. I think DeCastro will stick around. Gilbert.
I don't know if Gilbert will still be there or not. I mean, that's quite a ways. Obviously, Foster won't. Yeah. I guess a 50-50 chance, Pouncey. I mean, I would bet against Pouncey still being around at that point,
yeah,
right?
I would too. I wrote about it today, actually, about why he might leave with Ben, but not because of Ben. So go check that article out on Steelers Depot.
All right, here we go. Let's see. Grant Baker was the one that asked the question about Vegas, and our buddy at Sub Burger, David, who asked about Mike Tomlin. What do you think about Mike Tomlin? Mike Tomlin going to be here in 5 years?
Yes, I think it's a 90% chance he'll be here. He's, 45 years old? The way the Steelers keep these guys around, I think the team's going to be successful. There's going to obviously be some issues with trying to find the next Ben, but what team would you rather have, or what coach would you rather have working that bridge of the adversity you got to deal with finding a franchise quarterback than Mike Tomlin? So I think I'm very confident he'll be here in 5 years.
But you got to admit, though, that I mean, he'll be at how many years? Let's see, he was retired 2007. So this will be what, 11th year, right?
Yeah, I think he's going into his 11th year.
All right. So, I mean, yeah, five more years on to that, you get into that kind of that kind of will he want to – will he want to?
Right.
Okay. If he does not win a Super Bowl within the next 5 years, will he still be the head coach?
Yeah, I think he still will be. Just I mean, obviously the context of what happened and how close they came is going to matter. But again, I just go back to the question of, you know, Ben's not going to be here in 5 years, but what coach would you rather have of keeping this team together and getting through those I'm sure tougher times than Mike Tomlin. And you're right. Yeah, he's going to be coaching for a long time, but he's talked about it before. What are his other hobbies? What's he going to do? You know, he's a football junkie. Football's all he's ever known. And he's got a real sincere passion for the game, and I don't think he's ready to walk away anytime soon.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and bet that he will be, but it does put him right at that kind of, I mean, 15 years, that's a long time to coach in the NFL.
But it'll only be 50, and that's youthful. Some coaches don't get hired until they're 55, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a long time to coach. I mean, I thought, you know, I kind of thought Cowher would have coached longer than what he did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
as well. So, okay, twist my arm. I'll say it, but you know, I say that it'll be there, but it does give you pause, right, to kind of wander that far out. Okay, from Jake Marion, Power Moose on Twitter. He writes, what does Ben need to do that will help his road game performance? Jake, we've written and talked about this quite a bit. We wish we knew. Is it crowd noise? Is it you know, having to be under center maybe a little bit more? You know, we've had Sean write about this quite a bit. I've looked at it a lot of bit. I know Alex has looked at it a lot of bit, you know, quite a bit. We wish we had the answer.
Yeah, I think we have Harvard professors that are in a lab somewhere trying to figure that answer out, because I said it before, if we knew the answer to it, it'd be corrected. I've had the theory that I think the lack of no huddle and being unable to go that because you're on the road and things are loud has hurt Ben, because, you know, just being able to do that once or twice a game will just help reestablish that rhythm and kind of get Ben into the flow of things. So even when you stop going no huddle, I think Ben's a little more comfortable and puts the defense on their heels a little bit. So that, I think, is a part of it, but it's hard to give you a complete answer because, you know, if we had the complete answer, it wouldn't be an issue, wouldn't be a question we'd be talking about.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you're not allowed to cherry pick the stats either, but I mean, if you threw out the game against the Eagles, one that the Steelers, you know, couldn't block anybody and got down early and just nothing was going right in that game whatsoever, young receivers on the field. And you threw out the game against the Buffalo Bills in the snow, the game that the Steelers won, and you know, but Roethlisberger didn't overly play well. If you throw those two games out, you know, look at the stats then. I mean, at least they get a little bit more respectable. And then, of course, you know, the game against Miami earlier in the season. You know, yeah, you can't cherry pick those, but if you took his two worst ones and threw them out, how do the stats look? And part of me, though, keeps wanting to go back and just, you know, the kind of inexperience of that you know, a few positions there. You know, they lost Mark. You know, they, even though Marcus Wheaton played early in the season, he didn't play much at all, and he was gone before, you know, gone before you knew it. And then, you know, Eli Rogers and that foot injury that he had, and his kind of youthfulness, and maybe not still being on the page there. And Sammy, even though he caught a lot of deep balls early on, let's face it, he was a one-trick pony. That pretty much left AB and being bracketed quite a bit. You know, a lot of me wants to go back to kind of personnel, maybe playing.
But it's the same personnel at home, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, with crowd noise and maybe.
Well, right, then we're getting into different factors. It's not a personnel issue, it's a other
factor. Right, but I'm thinking better personnel may have been able to handle those other factors, you know, a little bit. I think there's a lot that goes into it. I just don't think it's just personnel, obviously, but because you're right. I mean, the same personnel that he played well with at home. And look, you go back and look and see how well he played in the opener against the Redskins, right? In that game as well, too. So, I mean, like we said, Jake, there's so many factors involved there, and it's kind of nauseating trying to keep drilling down into that. So the big thing is, I think, that we need to see, and we talked about this when we were talking about Roethlisberger a little bit earlier, just got to play a little bit better than he did, a lot better than he did on the road than he did last year. Chad Prince writes, are Martavis and Juju the fix to better red zone efficiency, or is there something scheme-wise that you'd like to see changed? I tell you one thing, I don't want to see them guards on the move deep inside the red zone. Buckle your chin straps up and just try to blow them off the line as far as that goes. Now, as far as passing red zone efficiency, Martavis hasn't been bad in the red zone. I think his return gives you another element there. We talked earlier about Jesse. Jesse James has been good in the red zone. What else we got here? I mean, Eli, I think Juju can be a much better – I think Juju can be a early season asset inside the red zone.
I think that's part of the reason why he was brought in. He's a bigger guy. He's got a great feel of finding, soft spots in zone coverage. He's tough. He's physical. He'll be able to go across the middle and make difficult catches. So, I think that that's part of the element. We'll have to see how he does in camp and what his snap count is like. I think it's a combination, Chad. Obviously, getting Martavis Bryant back is huge for the red zone. And I think, as we mentioned earlier, Dave and I, Jesse James has to be a bigger presence in the red zone. That's going to be one of his keys and kind of tells you about how good of a season he has. Scheme-wise, I mean, I'd have to go back and look through it. There's always things that you can scheme up and work a little bit better. They ran a mesh concept a lot more towards the end of the year, where where a wide receiver comes underneath the wide tight end on crossing patterns. They can create some picks when you're playing man coverage. I'd like to see some of, I think, Haley Staples, the spot concept in the red zone, which is a curl flat corner a triangle read that's been effective in the past. And I just think in general in the red zone, some of these guys have to really work hard to get open, do some of the little things to separate the top of their stem, and then also to work away from linebackers in zone coverage or run away from man and find those soft spots. So it's rarely one issue. It's usually a combination of things. So personnel is getting better, which will help, and hopefully, they go back and they tweak some things in the scheme to improve red zone efficiency as well.
I tell you, being assignment sound means so much too, because you even go back to that opener against the Redskins, and hooray, red zone touchdown to Eli Rogers in that game. But so much was wrong on that play.
Right, that was the craziest bounce in the world. Yeah, totally luck.
And Roethlisberger, I think, talked about it after the fact of one of them not running the right depth in there, and the other not taking the right angle in there. So it's little things like that. Even though it's successful, well, it was a successful play. That, how many times does that go on that we don't necessarily pick up on? Look at one of the ones Jesse had last year, the touchdown. Who was it against? Was it the
I don't know.
Jets? Maybe it was a game against the Chiefs, maybe, where multiple players in the same spot in the end zone.
Okay. Right. And then it bit him against Buffalo when Green wasn't on the same page. Had a great drive that ended on miscommunication and interception.
Exactly. So it's little things like that that even in the successful situations last year in the red zone efficiency area, you go back now and you watch those and you kind of cringe, even though you know the outcome of the play. So, hopefully getting. And look, you're going to have another young fella in there in Juju this year. You're going to have a guy in Martavis Bryant back that, let's face it, he's going to have to get back with the terminology and assignments and things that you think he'll be able to do. But is that going to lead to some early season snafus, if you will,
Right. Yeah, that's a valid point.
All right, thanks for the question, Chad. In short, I think Martavis and Juju will help fix the red zone. And once again, it'd be interesting to see how assignment sound both those guys are. Thomas J.L. Kastner. Thomas, you sound like Thomas J.L. Kastner, sound like you maybe spent time on the Titanic back then. Sounds like one of those rich names, if you will. Do you
Have you watched the Titanic? Have you watched the
I
movie, Dave?
actually, unfortunately, have. And for some reason, when
Oh.
that damn thing comes, every time you turn on the TV, the Titanic's on, it seems like. He writes, Big Ben hasn't thrown for 5,000 yards in a season. Will he ever? I think it's easy for me to go the cheap route out and say no. But I don't think he has to, on top of, but odds tell me that he won't, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, this is as good of a season as any to do it. So if he doesn't do it this year, he probably will never. I don't know. He probably won't, just because so few guys do. He's not Drew Brees, where he gets to throw the ball 50 times every single game. They have enough of a running attack to take, some of those pass attempts away from Ben. I guess I'll be with you and say no, but he'll be close.
He also writes, do you think Bell, Le'Veon Bell's snap count is reduced in 2017? If so, by how much? Man, if he doesn't sign a long-term deal, I'm not taking him out of the game. You know, he's playing 98.99% of the snaps if he doesn't sign a long-term deal by July 17th. Look, I mean, he's, you know, as much as you kind of like what James Conner can bring and potentially maybe either Niall Davis or Fitzgerald Toussaint, yada, yada, you know, how often do you really want to take him out of the game, regardless of whether or not he signs a contract? So, no, I mean, I don't think you're going to see him reduced all that much. I mean, if there's any reduction in there, I think it's late game reduction. Hopefully the Steelers are up by 10 in the fourth quarter and they put someone like Connor in there to kind of wear down some folks. So I'm playing him.
Yeah, I think you might see a small reduction, but, you know, emphasis on a small reduction where it might be 3 to 5% fewer snaps. You know, James Conner getting 4 or 5 carries a game, you know, maybe 2 series of work and some short yard situations I could see, although Bell statistically was the best short yardage runner last year, but not by much. Bell's your guy. You know, this isn't the time to get cute, put in the rookie. Bell's the guy everyone has complete trust and confidence in. So, yeah, a small reduction, but it, you know, it won't be too noticeable.
You play to win the game.
All right, Herm Edwards.
Plain and simple. You got. Mm-hmm. I think you got to have him out there. Christian Perry, along the lines of trade talk earlier, Christian Perry wants to know, what trade would you like to see happen? Geez, there's just so many variables that go into, you know, the salary cap and who's available, and you know, you're not going to trade for a guy in the final year of his contract because that's, you know, 1 year rental kind of thing. I'm trying to come up with a top of my head of a guy that maybe might be under contract for the next 2 or 3 years that kind of fits a position of need that you know, not going to cost your normal leg cap wise. Can you come up with anybody that meets that kind of criteria, Alex?
I really hadn't, and I hadn't given it much thought. Usually, you know, I think most teams approach too, as you go into camp, you see the 90 that you have and how things are going, and if you have to make moves, you go from there. I had kicked around the idea of Vance McDonald a couple weeks ago, then I realized his contract was massive and there was just no way you could trade for that deal, so I kind of threw that idea aside. But, you know, I honestly, Christian, I get the question, but I just haven't really thought about it at all because I care more about guys that might get cut and guys I can get for free, you know, without having to trade anything away than a possible trade. You know, once we get into camp and we anticipate injuries or, you know, performance is good or bad, that will help shape any idea of a trade route as opposed to right now in July when we're kind of just waiting to see how these guys do in Latrobe.
Yeah, look, I would lend to it maybe being a tight end as well, too. I mean, let's see. I mean, it's not going to be Jimmy Graham, Kelsey, Reed, Gronkowski, Zach Kurtz. Probably not Clay. Greg Olsen's a little expensive. Wheaton ain't going anywhere. Dwayne Allen just signed a deal. I don't know, what do you think about Kyle Rudolph? How many more years does Kyle Rudolph have?
Yeah, I don't know if he's the blocker though for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's, but I mean, tough sell. If you got him kind of more of a flex player, I think he's under contract for 2017, 18, 19. I don't know. Maybe you could twist my arm to get behind something like that. I've always been kind of a Kobe Fleener fan, even though I shouldn't be. You know. Jermaine Gresham, Delaney Walker, and then I tell you, Jack Doyle, I'm a huge Jack Doyle's my kind of guy, but unfortunately, didn't he just sign a new contract?
Yeah.
So I mean, there's no reason for the Colts to sign him. Going back down, Julius Thomas, Deion Sims, Gates is up there in years. Jared Cook, we're getting down into this where I don't know. I push comes to shove, I have to name you a name. Maybe Kyle Rudolph. How's that? What else do we have here? Boy, we got a lot of questions here.
I want to go to one real quick that I think we missed. Carlos, a longtime reader, says most likely to happen: T.J. Watt is the starter come week 10, or Bud Dupree hits 7 sacks by week 10. So, what more likely?
This is an easy one for me, as Watt becomes a starter by week 10. But I'll preface that by saying, just because you look in the game book and Watt started, gets the official start, doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to play more snaps than James Harrison in a game. And, you know, we kind of saw that last year with Jarvis and Debo, right? You know? And Bud Dupree even later in the season, you know, for that matter. So I would, if I was forced to put my money down on the table, it'd be that Watt becomes a starter before week 10 and prior to Dupree hitting 7 sacks. Now, it'd be a great problem to have if Dupree is pushing for those 7 sacks, in my opinion, by week 10 as well, too. But just the odds and kind of what's happened previously and knowing that I don't think the Steelers are going to be fearful to throw Watt out there as a starter sooner rather than later lends me to go that way.
Right, that was generally the way I was going to go, too. And now I've been one of the more optimistic people on Bud Dupree, and I think he'll be close. I think he'd be around maybe the 6, 6.5 mark, but I could see Dupree as a guy that I think appears to be in great shape and you know, well conditioned, is someone that could really come on strong towards the end where other teams are a little worn down. So I think Watt is more likely, but I think it'll be more of a ceremonial thing, as you pointed out, where, you know, Watt's going to start. But I think regardless, you're going to see a pretty heavy rotation about every series between Watt and Harrison throughout most of the year.
And we won't have time for this final question today, but maybe we'll get some of these numbers up together for Raheem Jawani, I think it's pronounced. He wants to know, may have done this before, but compare Steelers defensive packages usage percentage versus league-wide numbers. I don't know if I've got the league-wide numbers laying around for stuff like dime and nickel, but look, I mean, we know that the Steelers, how much were they in nickel last year, Alex?
Oh, I'd have to look it up, but 65-70% of the time. I can look it up real quick here.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot. I mean, in their sub package, it's like 3/4 of the time.
Right, and you know, league wide, with more and more teams rolling out 3 wide receivers on early downs, I mean, teams are just getting away from their base. You're seeing a lot of, you know, nickel, dime, penny, you know, kind of coverages on early downs, you know, and I don't think that's going to change. I mean, the days until the fullback comes back and the two tight, you know, the Steelers really are only ones that to this day have no problem rolling out 2 tight ends to start off a game on first and 10, right?
Dying breed.
Right.
I have the numbers I pulled up for my charting last year. Last year in nickel, 64.9% of the time. In dime, 5.6% of the time. They were in their 3-4, 28.3% of the time. So essentially a little more than 70% sub-package, and most of the rest is base.
We live in a spread world now, so I mean, you're going to start seeing spread defenses and the like, your sub package will probably include your base should become your sub package, and anytime you have a nose tackle on the field, you know, take a picture of it type of situation there. All right, we appreciate all the questions this week as well. We'll be getting more into breaking down some of these players in our 50 for 25 series, moving out through the remainder of the off season, the final 4 weeks or so before training camp gets underway. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers D. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we flap our gums about and want to support the cause, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com. Find the donate button up right. Navigational bar. And until Friday, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.